And welcome back to Big Red in Beijing. In this episode, we sat down with three-time Olympian and two-time gold medalist, Brianne Jenner. It was amazing talking to Brianne, especially as recently, in honor of the 50th anniversary of female athletics at Cornell, she was ranked 8th in all-time amongst all female athletes to ever play for the Big Red in any sport. So it was very special to talk with Brianne, and this will actually mark our final interview of Big Red in Beijing. We've loved covering the Beijing Olympics all the way back to the games in February, and then since being able to sit down and talk with these amazing athletes and hear their stories. So thank you for sticking along throughout all the interviews, and I know that you'll enjoy this final one. So let's take you right to it.
So it is a great honor that I introduce our final guest to the Big Red in Beijing podcast. In Beijing, she was the Women's Hockey Tournament MVP and now a two-time gold medalist for Team Canada and former Big Red captain, Brianne Jenner. First of all, how are you doing today, Brianne?
I'm doing great. I'm really excited to be on the podcast with you guys.
Well, of course, it's a true honor. And now, first, we have to ask, North of the border yesterday, it was Victoria Day. Did you do anything special for the long weekend?
I'm just up at my parents' house right now, and all my family, my brother's family is in town from up northern Ontario. Nice. So just spending time, lots of time in the pool, spending time with family. So kind of the best thing to do on a long weekend.
Of course. Truly, that's awesome. And it's a true real honor to talk to you. Obviously, it was over 3 months ago now that you won your second gold medal. You helped lead what was the best Olympic run anyone may ever see. Just pure dominance on the ice, honestly. Looking back now, what do you think made that campaign so special compared to previous Olympics?
Well, how long do we have?
we got time.
You know, it's a tough question to answer, because this was probably one of the most fun hockey seasons I've ever had. One of the best teams I've ever been a part of. And I think we changed a lot on the ice in terms of our tactics. I think we did a lot of work on our offensive structure. And I think people saw the fruits of that labor in Beijing. But we also did a lot of work just on our mental performance and our culture. And we really established a culture that we're quite proud of on our team and want to carry forward. And it was just a treat to go to the rink every day, even going through a season where COVID threw a lot of kind of curveballs into our plan. We had a blast together, and we really looked out for each other and were able to navigate that as a team. So right from all of our staff, our management, all of the players, I think we really just enjoyed going through the journey together.
And Canada outscored their opponents 57-10. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard years in the making on repeat that often as it was playing in Beijing, but you just went a perfect 7-0 and of course claimed the gold medals against the rivals of the US. And I know, you know, off the ice, sometimes the friendships and connections, you know, aren't as tough. So can you talk a little bit about that slightly weird dynamic between which is probably the greatest rivalry in sports?
Yeah, it is an unbelievable rivalry. I mean, off the ice, you kind of have to separate it in ways. Off the ice, you know, there's a lot of friendships across those teams. A lot of players, you know, played in the NCAA together, played college hockey together. And so, you know, you have a special bond with your college teammates, as I know. And then we have a lot of respect for them, what we're trying to do with the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association and coming together with them and working with them and standing together, united. That being said, even though we have all this respect, I mean, when the puck is dropped, I think the rivalry takes over and it gets pretty heated. And there's, you know, in those 60 minutes, there's a lot of hate. But then, of course, you know, I think there's a lot of sportsmanship on the other side and on our side. And when it's over, it's over. So we prepare for every game the same way, but we certainly kind of circle our calendars a little bit when we know we're going to go up against those guys.
And almost maybe that closeness off the ice is what makes it, you know, even adds to it when you're actually on the ice. And, you know, we've had, as I said, Coach Dara on a few times now. And, you know, when we had him on after the games, we asked how that line of Nurse, Pooh and Jenner came to be, because it was, you know, you didn't start off the games playing together. He said it almost came about as an accident. Do you remember how that line, that top line, was kind of structured? Was that a decision by Coach Ryan, or was it almost, like, as Coach said, by accident?
Well, I'd probably have to yield to what Coach says on this, because they don't invite me into those meetings as a player. They would be fascinating to be a part of. But yeah, I think a lot of times, you know, the teams that are successful in hockey tournaments are the ones that can adjust on the fly. And sometimes you just have to make those little tweaks here and there, even when things are, you know, on paper going well, we are winning games, but we're constantly throughout the round robin, throughout the tournament, seeing where we could, you know, tweak and get better. And our coaches were fantastic at kind of reading the situations for us all year and making the right adjustments. And, you know, we have so many talented players on our team. So sometimes it's just a matter of where the puzzle pieces fit. And, you know, someone like Emily Clark, I like absolutely love playing with, but some, you know, it kind of fit for us a little bit better having her with Turnbull, and just the way that they, I mean, getting forechecks by the two of them, it's got to be the worst combo coming down on you as a defenseman that I can imagine in a game. So it was, yeah, it kind of just happened where Nursey was switched in with us. And it, you know, when you have a bit of success, you got to roll with it, right? No matter what your original plan is, you got to adapt and roll with it and see what the chemistry is. So, yeah, it was exciting to see Nursey. I mean, Nursey had a tough season, and that she was injured for a lot of the first part of it. So to see her come back and have the tournament that she did, it was so exciting to see.
And I would say for sure a bit of success would be a large understatement. I mean, Nurse yeah. obviously broke the record for the most points in the tournament. You tied the Olympic record with 9 goals for the most goals. So now we also have to ask, because obviously, you know, it's a little bit of a loaded question, but the main goal, the main objective is to win gold. And that's all you're really focused on. But now, you know, looking back, do those individual achievements or marks have some importance, or is it almost just kind of a byproduct of playing well and playing together?
I think it's a byproduct. I mean, when I think of what we went there for, it was to win gold as a team any possible way. You know, we felt that we needed to kind of add a goal per game against the Americans. And so that was part of our plan, was to go in with a stronger offense than we had in previous years. And I think where you make note of those individual records is just in the fact that it's a sign that, I'll put it this way. I think it's sort of the poetry of sport that this is the Team Canada that I've been on that shared the puck probably better than any Team Canada I've played on, moved the puck selflessly, played as a 5-man unit, 5-woman unit. And then was a team that was able to have those kind of individual records broken. So I think the value in it is that it shows you that the way we were playing, like, there's some really positive byproducts that come out of it. But in terms of us going there to break offensive records, wasn't in the plans. We wanted to go there and, you know, of course had more offense than we had in previous years, but the goal was to win gold. And if we had to do that with a 1-0 win or 11-0, we would have been happy either way.
Now, Brianna, as maybe my friend Michael here can testify, you know, Canadians are typically known for being nice, but on the ice, you guys held nothing back against your opponents. I mean, Michael also mentioned earlier that 57-10 ratio. So some might say you guys were even ruthless, but frequently scoring double digits in most games. Did Coach Ryan ever say to take the foot off the pedal, or did you keep giving it 100% even when the game is virtually over?
No, we had to stick to our game plan and stick to the habits and the way that we wanted to play, no matter where the score, what the score was. And I think, you know, we always pride ourselves on being respectful, you know, not showboating. Right. But, you know, when we were excited when we scored, it was because, you know, it was probably because it was a play that we had practiced, or a great execution of our game plan. So we really took the focus away from any opponent. We prepared the same way, we focused on ourselves, and sometimes that, you know, resulted in a lopsided score, sometimes it didn't. But, you know, even in those games where I remember a game against Switzerland, I think we were up by a good margin going into the third. And, you know, we were getting a talking to between periods because our shift lengths were too long and we needed to get back to the way we wanted to play. So, you know, even though some of those games, you know, can look lopsided, there's a purpose to what we're doing because we need to, you know, if we expect to play in a semifinal game, we need to have those habits in place in the round robin. If we expect to play in a final game, we need to have those habits in place in the semifinals. So it was really more of a product of focusing on ourselves and what we needed to do.
And aside from self-concentration in that regard, would you also argue a sort of a psychological tactic in a way, seeing such a powerful sign, like letting yourselves known, in other words?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a part of sport. There's a little bit of mental warfare, and you want to take every edge you can. I mean, we never want to cross the line and be disrespectful to any opponent at all. But we want to play our best possible hockey. I mean, you train 4 years for this tournament, you train a lifetime for this tournament. So our goal is to, you know, bring our A+ game for every single opportunity we have at an Olympic Games.
So again, now that you have won 2 Olympic gold medals, can you walk us through the emotions you feel standing on the blue line, singing "Oh Canada" with your teammates, knowing that you ended up on top again?
It's hard to put into words that feeling. I think one of the emotions you feel is relief because you build up to this moment. This, you know, it's a one game final, and you just want to perform. All the hours of work that you put in for that moment, you just want to bring your best foot forward and be there for your teammates. So when, you know, we can say that we did it and you have a gold medal to prove it, it feels pretty amazing. You know, this year was special too, because, you know, we had some challenges over the last number of years. We had a lot of overtime losses, shootout loss. Mm-hmm. We saw a lot of silver. And for us to be able to kind of change our story, change our narrative, do it together, and be able to see some of my teammates who had never won a gold before have that around their neck at the World Championships, to see, you know, our teammates put the gold medals around each other's necks at Beijing, which was a really kind of special moment. Normally it's an official that you don't know that's putting it around your neck, but to see my teammates put that on each other, and for those that had never been Olympic champions before, it was just the coolest moment to be a part of.
So I could only imagine, you know, the electricity that runs through you, that sort of sensation of accomplishment, like you just said. Now, I don't know how much you can get into this, but what were the celebrations like in Beijing after you had finally claimed gold?
You know, I don't think I could show you any pictures and video, but I could, I could give you a few descriptors. It was unique because we didn't have family and friends there. And so that was, that's of course challenging, but what it did afford us is just time to celebrate with each other. You know, we had all our staff in our dressing room, all our players, and I'll tell you, there was a good amount of champagne. I think the floor was pretty much a slip and slide by the end of the celebrations, but it was really special. I mean, we spent a lot of time on the road together, a lot of time isolated away from our families, and we leaned on each other a lot, and to have, you know, those couple of days in Beijing where we could just celebrate as really a second family for all of us, and you know, share those moments with each other, it was really special. So we had a few pops in the dressing room, I'll say that.
Well deserved congratulatory champagnes, of course, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about the first Olympics you competed in. Obviously, you just missed the cut in Vancouver. So going into Sochi, you're trying, you probably feel like you have a lot to prove, even though I'm sure you didn't. But let's look at that gold medal game where you scored the key goal to come back for Canada after you guys were down 2-0. I believe it was like just over 3 minutes left and you got the shot off the American defender. Do you remember anything about that moment and about scoring that goal? I mean, it's kind of a hard question to answer, but.
Not really, honestly. Like, my teammates make fun of me because we get back to the bench after a shift and sometimes I don't even remember what happened in the shift before. I feel like when you make good hockey plays, sometimes, you know, some of the best goals you set up or the best goals you score, you're just on autopilot, right? Because you've just muscle memory. So I don't remember a lot about that. I remember the dressing room though in that game before we went to overtime. Even the dressing room before we went to the third period when we were down 2-0. And I just remember looking around and seeing just the focus. Like everyone was just so lost in the game. Talking about, you know, face-off plays, talking about breakouts. It was really a huge lesson for me in kind of staying in the process, not focusing on the outcome, but just getting lost in the process and seeing that the way the veterans handled themselves in that situation. And obviously it was a bit of a fairy tale story for Canada in that game. And it's honestly, that game is one of the wildest I've ever been a part of. Second to actually a game at Cornell where we won 8-7 in triple overtime over BU. I bring that game up a lot because that's the most fun game ever, but it's just, it was a fairy tale, Sochi, and still a little bit surreal to be a part of that.
Mm-hmm. No, I remember, you know, watching that moment in school because of the time zone, the way it worked out.
Yeah.
Obviously being in Russia, and I know, I think it was Sarah Filliere amongst other, you know, a lot of the younger players on the team who spoke to that as an inspirational moment. And now they get to play with you and Pooh and Johnston and all the greats. So obviously that was a big moment. And I guess, you know, looking at that shot that went off the defender, I would say it was a fortunate bounce as a supporting Canada. Did you ever get any chirps or things about that and kind of the way it went in, or was everyone just kind of happy that the puck was in the back of the net?
I think the only chirps I've gotten for that are maybe from family. But I think everyone on my team was just really grateful I put the puck on net, to be honest. And that's the way it goes sometimes, right? Like you get these amazing chances and, you know, miss them, but then you get a little bounce here and there, and that's just the momentum shifts of hockey. So I'm pretty grateful for that ugly goal. Probably one of the best ugly goals I've got in my life.
Well, yeah, no, I'm sure we're all thankful for it.
Well, of course, with that, Brianne, we'd like to take it back to basically your genesis, your origin stories. And we wanted to ask, do you remember who or what got you into playing hockey in the first place?
Yeah, I mean, I have a little bit of a quintessential Canadian story. I lived on a school. My dad was a teacher, and he, on the front lawn was a big soccer field. So he built a rink in the winter. So I'd be out there, start skating at 2. And then my dad and my uncle also ran kids hockey league. So I was kind of born into a pretty solid hockey family and started playing at 3 and just was really passionate about it. And I was really fortunate that my parents always supported me, but never, you know, pushed me in any direction. They just saw that I had a passion for this and, you know, were up early in the morning driving me to the rink and always great supporters, my whole family. So I was lucky that way.
Well, I think I speak on behalf of, you know, obviously Canada as well as Cornell University when I say thank goodness for that. Thank goodness that all that occurred again in your genesis. And of course, now being at Appleby College, which I believe is the school you live near, correct?
Yeah, that's the school. I went to high school there, but I also grew up there from 0 to 5. So lots of great memories there.
Well, as you can see, we do our homework here.
You do. Well done. Well done.
And of course, coming to Cornell, it is evident that academics has an important role in your life. So we were wondering if you can speak to the experience of being both a high-performing athlete and disciplined student at the same time.
Yeah, I mean, in the women's hockey world, you know, being a good student really opens up a lot of opportunities for you. Well, in any industry. And I had the fortunate opportunity to play 4 years at Cornell, 4 of the most fun years of hockey. I was just back in Ithaca a couple weeks ago, and it really is a second home there. And I love my time on the Hill. I think academics have, but you know, I was from a family of teachers, and academics was always super, super important. And, you know, had the opportunity to study government at Cornell and then went on to do a master's of public policy as well. So I think being a student athlete really is a healthy balance almost. I think a lot of people think that just focusing on sports is the route to becoming the best athlete you can be. But I think it's really good to have a balance to, you know, have work in the classroom, to have other interests that are a part of your life. And I think it's a really healthy balance. And I learned so many great skills from having to juggle, you know, playing at elite level, leaving for Team Canada camps, and also having to do, you know, the full schedule of Cornell Academics. So it taught me a lot and made me, I think, become more disciplined and more organized and all of those good qualities.
Well, you know, we can all speak to the challenge of being Cornell students while not also being, you know, an Olympian athlete. So we obviously respect all the hard work and dedication that, you know, goes into your time at Cornell. And I guess you spoke a little bit about visiting Ithaca a few weeks back. What was it like to go back to campus? Did any of the gold medals make it to the Hill, or was it kind of just nice to see some familiar faces?
It was so nice to be back on campus. And honestly, just seeing the hustle and bustle of students, you know, between classes, it was, especially after the last couple of years, being back in Ithaca, just seeing live students again, that you know, that exciting commotion, it was really cool. Brought the gold medal back, was able to share it with the current Cornell women's team and some of their incoming recruits. So really cool to be back in the dressing room and talk to the girls and connect with some of those players. And I'm hoping I can make it down for some of their games next season.
Yeah, and obviously I was actually jumping for joy just a second earlier because I heard you mention you were a government major. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I know. So I am a government major myself. And, you know, of course, I have to ask, you know, given that we're both government majors, was it the academics that motivated you to come to Cornell, or were there other factors that led to your decision to come and play for the Big Red?
I'd say it was both. Academics was the main reason that I narrowed down to the final school choices that I had. That was kind of the leading factor in my decision. Then I came on campus and I just fell in love with it, and I really really kind of fell in love with the culture that they had on the hockey team as well, and some of the players that they had there. I knew that it was a place where I was going to go, that I was going to develop. You know, you play on the weekends in college hockey. And so much of your development is really about those practice times. And mm-hmm. Are you with players that are going to push you, with a coach that's going to push you? And I really felt that Cornell was kind of the perfect mix of obviously very strong academics, but also a program that I really wanted to be a part of.
Oh, of course. And during your time in Ithaca, you got to play alongside future teammates, namely Rebecca Johnston and Jill Saunier, just to name a few. Mm-hmm. And now, can you tell us who has changed the most from their college days?
Oh, that's a great question. Jill hasn't changed at all. Jill's the same as when she came in nice. Freshman year, I feel like.
Yeah.
Who has changed the most? That's a tough one. I guess I would probably have to say my relationship with Lori and Joe's changed a little bit. I feel like mm-hmm. she's really Rog, like, has, at first I think we were both shy around each other, and now like we both really came out of our shells, and she's the best dance partner in the dressing room that I've ever found. So yeah. I have to say, yeah, probably Rog.
And, you know, we have to ask another kind of specific question, but something that we just kind of noticed when watching all these games. Obviously, when you were with the Big Red, you wore number 11 and Jill yep. wore number 19.
Yeah, and we traded.
Yeah, so now you traded. So we asked Coach this and he wasn't sure, but he said, well, all I can tell you is that Jill still calls Brianne one. So was this a coincidental trade or was it on purpose? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I wore 11 in college. I always loved 11 growing up. But when I got to the national team, Cheryl Pounder, who wore 11 for years and years and years, had just retired. So out of respect for her, we didn't wear 11 for a couple of years. So when I joined, they gave me 19. And, you know, as a rookie on the national team, you're not going to say boo, you're going to take whatever number. And 19 was a great number. So I was just excited to have a jersey in my stall. And then, I guess when Jill made it a couple of years later, 11 was open, and she was like, this is great. I'll wear ones. That's what she always calls me, ones. That's our nickname. So we kind of did a little trade, and now we both call each other ones. So it's a little bit confusing, but
that's awesome.
Yeah, I guess life has a way in its own regard. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Brianne, but you met your wife Haley at Cornell, as she was also on the Big Red hockey team, correct?
Yes. Actually, I met her before Cornell, a little bit. We trained together the summer before Cornell and played Team Ontario together. But yeah, pretty happy she decided to go to Cornell as well.
So this leads up to the following question. Is it safe to say that your baby June will be a future Big Red hockey player?
If June likes hockey, then we absolutely would support that. And we'd probably, I mean, the only influence we try to have is steer away from Harvard and make sure she goes to Cornell, but we'll see where her interests lie. And of course, if it's hockey, then that would be fantastic.
No, exactly. And now we've now had Coach Dara on this podcast a few times, as my Canadian co-partner Michael mentioned. So how special was it to have Coach, you know, someone who played a critical role in your development as a player, you know, there with you when you won this gold?
Yeah, it was pretty special. I feel like, you know, with every player and staff member on this team, we're bonded for life. And it was kind of extra special to be able to do that with Coach. You know, we had a few ECAC championships in our time, but we are never kind of able to get that national championship. That was our ultimate goal. So to be able to do this and to win a championship on the biggest stage together was really, really special. And, you know, Coach brought so much to the table for our team. You know, he was unbelievable. He got our PK in order. He was just fantastic on the bench. And he's really, I don't know the best way to put this. He's a big hockey nerd. He can just talk the X's and O's of hockey for hours and hours and hours. So to have someone who has that much experience and that much knowledge on our staff, I think it was fantastic. And, you know, our entire staff was unbelievable, but it was really cool now to have that shared memory and that shared championship with Coach.
Yeah, of course. And now representing your country is, of course, one of the biggest honors an athlete can have. So can you speak to what it means to not only wear the maple leaf, but also be an alternate captain for Team Canada?
It's a huge honor. It's especially in this group where honestly we have so many leaders throughout the entire roster, and that was something that we really prided ourselves on this year. Was, you know, even those players that were in their first ever season with the national team could lead us on any given day, you know, when it was needed. So it's an honor to, you know, to be recognized and to be given that responsibility. And I know it's certainly something that myself and the other members of the leadership group take very seriously, and we want to make sure that, you know, we're not only bringing our best selves to the rink, but trying to bring out the best in others. So yeah, it was just really special to have the opportunity to be a leader with this group.
Yeah.
And speaking about being a leader, it's not too often, you know, that we ask Olympians, those who are so inspirational and impactful on us mere mortals, about, you know, who inspires them. So Brianne, where do you get your inspiration from?
Well, I mean, the biggest highlight of my hockey season was actually not winning the Olympics. It was the birth of my daughter. So that's a huge inspiration for me. You know, I have to unfortunately be away from, especially this past year, I had to be away from my family quite a bit. And so I want to make sure that when I am, you know, away on road trips at the rink, that I'm making sure that I'm putting my full effort into it, because they're sacrificing a lot and supporting me in order for me to do this. So that's always number one, is making sure that those that have, you know, support me and love me, that I'm making them proud and doing the best possible job I could.
Well, in that case, I can assure you that your loved ones are certainly proud of you, as well as the whole nation. And with that being said, I kind of want to throw it on to more lighthearted questions, of course. Of course, the first one being, what is your particular favorite Canadian food?
Canadian food. I don't even know what would qualify into that category. Have you ever had a beaver tail?
It's actually very interesting that you bring that up, because I was just in Toronto and I had one for the first time in my life when I was there.
Pretty good, right? Yeah. You have to get the original, like cinnamon and sugar. So it's like an elephant ear for all our American listeners. It's like fried dough, but it's a little bit thinner and they put cinnamon sugar on it. So that's up there. But I think in my regular diet, like maple syrup, like we have to have that when we go on the road. I always got to pack maple syrup so I can have it, my oatmeal. It's a go-to, but the real stuff, not breakfast syrup, like real maple syrup.
Now I also want to ask a question that is somewhat food related, because I found this absolutely astounding when I went to Toronto. What do you guys call what Americans think is Canadian bacon?
Oh, female bacon.
Yeah. What now, why do you call it that? It's one of the most,
I don't know. That's just the name of it. I don't know. But you know what? Like sometimes in the States, you guys call like just thinly sliced ham, breakfast ham, Canadian bacon. And that's not Canadian bacon.
I never understood that.
Yeah. It's thick with like cornmeal on the outside. That's true Canadian bacon. You might have to come up here to find it.
Because I was in Toronto and I was astounded, because I went to the supermarket and of course, you know, my buddy was cooking bacon and it was regular bacon. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, you know, if I'm in Canada, do you guys just have Canadian bacon? He's like, no, that's not what we call it. and then obviously, you know, apart from the Canada stuff, I had a question about being in Beijing. So when you were in Beijing in the Olympic Village, where you guys had roommates, obviously.
Yeah, we actually, so we had, I don't know if it's the same for all athletes in our village, but we had an apartment where you'd have like three to like four other roommates, but you had your own room, which was like, that was quite nice.
Nice. Did you ever have anyone who was like the worst roommate on the team? Like not naming any names, I'm just asking.
There's no bad roommates. There's just roommates that maybe you're less compatible with.
Exactly. That's a great answer.
I feel like there's no bad roommates. I mean, we usually have like one or two snorers on the team, but it works out fine because they usually get their own room.
That's a fair way for, you know, it to work out. We also had a fellow Cornellian, though she was on the USA figure skating team, Karen Chen, and she talked about how sometimes Olympians can share or like swap some of the gear that they get. I don't know if you found that, you know, to the Olympics you've gone to. Have you ever shared any of your, you know, Canadian exclusive, maybe it's like Lululemon or whatever, you know, the Bay like gear with another country's gear, or do you kind of just want to keep it to yourself?
I haven't. I think it's cool, like, to have all the Canadian stuff. Obviously, I'm really proud to wear the Canadian stuff. I'll tell you, this year though, I was approached by a lot of athletes because everyone wanted the Lulu gear. The Lulu gear was really popular, so I didn't trade anything away. I wanted to keep it all for myself.
Well, it was really special that Coach got to walk out with you guys at the closing ceremonies in the same Lululemon attire. And I asked him if he's going to wear it around campus, but I think it's a no from that. But
you know what? We kind of made fun of Coach a little bit because it took him a couple days to kind of really try out the Lulu stuff. Like when he first got there, it looked like he was just wearing his like what he would wear to the line at rink, like his black pants and black pea coat. And we were like, Coach, like, get in the Lulu gear. Come on, try it out. So he slowly eased into it.
Okay, that's good to know. It just took a few weeks, I guess.
Yeah.
Now I kind of want to revert back to the food thing, because another common theme that we've always talked about when it comes to Canadian food is apparently the heavy use of ketchup. Now, are you yourself a very avid ketchup user?
I was in childhood, for sure. Like I would put, so mac and cheese, we call it like Kraft dinner up here. I would put ketchup all in that. I don't know if that's like gross to some people, but ketchup on everything when I was a kid, no matter what it was. Now I've kind of, I have a more refined palate, I would say.
And by refined palate, do you mean like you apply ketchup to grilled cheese or just like strictly burgers?
I mean, grilled cheese maybe, but no, I would say I it's more like burgers and hot dogs now, french fries. The classic pairings.
Fair. And I wanted to say with the ketchup thing, Michael actually did bring us, or maybe he smuggled us, I'll say that on the air. he smuggled us some ketchup chips from Canada, and that stuff is good.
It is good, right? Yeah. It's like between like a dill pickle and a barbecue, but better. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually the perfect way to describe it. It's right in between that. It's like slightly vinegary, but not overwhelming, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
It just leaves your hands like red, stained red for a couple hours.
Pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess while we're on the topic of, you know, Cornell's things, what was your favorite place to study when you were here? Like, where'd you just find yourself gravitating towards? I know classes are over. We're trying so hard not to think about studying at all. But, you know, what's your favorite place to go and study?
I went through like library phases where I'd like try one out for like a month and then move on to the next one. So I really studied in like a lot of them. Freshman year, I'd go to Eurus to the Fishbowl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had early morning practices and I was a freshman and I wasn't getting enough sleep. So I'd go there and nap. I'd study and nap because I don't know if they still have the chairs there you could put together and they make a great bed.
Yeah, they still do.
Yeah. I also studied a lot at the law school library because like living in College Town, that was like the closest walk. But then I would say by the last couple of years, I ended up studying a lot on third floor man.
Oh yeah.
Second or third floor man. Because Mandible's like, I just loved the coffee there and I loved the paquito bowls. I don't know if they still have those. So it kind of was a go-to.
I'm not sure if they still have that.
I can't remember. Well, I guess, you know, it's good to know that some of our student athletes are well versed in all the libraries, not shouting out anyone on the men's hockey team who couldn't really.
You have to be.
Yeah.
You have to be. When you play Friday, Saturday, you end up like I would spend all day in the library Sunday. That was Sunday.
That's good. And I guess, you know, we kind of have to ask, it's a rare occasion where you win a gold medal or you win any Olympic medal and then you got to come back and just be a regular, maybe not regular, but, you know, student athlete or a student on campus. Did people ever recognize you or come up to you? Maybe it was fellow students. Maybe it was, you know, other people or while you were on campus, or was it kind of all low key that you were, you know, reigning gold medal winner?
I think it was pretty low key. To be honest, I didn't get stopped walking from class. No, I'm not that big of a deal, I don't think.
Well, you are to us, so you know if we saw you. But no, that's good to know, because obviously, you know, as a student, you just want to be able to focus on your studies and whatnot, and not have it be, you know, too much of a distraction. But obviously, it's pretty special that you're able to at such a young age, you know, win gold. So
I also want to ask, because, you know, we just had slope day. What is your favorite slope day memory that you have from Cornell?
Nelly, by far.
Oh, Nelly.
Oh, okay.
That was awesome. That was my freshman year. I was front row. Looking back, slightly dangerous because it was really muddy at the bottom of the slope and I was like pressed into the gate. But it was a pretty good first slope day. And I remember one of my teammates actually got up on stage and danced with Nelly. So that was an exciting one. We were pretty proud.
That's pretty cool. Now, I mean, it's weird because I guess, you know, during the years you're at Cornell, there's a lot of like hit artists that we would say looking back that got to perform. But I guess that's, you know, maybe when you guys had them performing, you guys were kind of like, oh, who's this? So kind of just works out that way. But
yeah, I remember we had Kendrick Lamar before he kind of blew up and Chance the rapper, who like both of those guys were awesome too.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure in between those two, in between Kendrick and Chance the Rapper, they had Ludacris, or we had Ludacris rather. So a funny sort of sandwich in between there.
Yeah. No, and I guess, but one of those years you were obviously away because you were competing with or training with the team and ahead of centralization. And then eventually, you know, the Sochi Olympics. Was that, sorry, it's a little bit of a loaded question, I guess, but what was the process like of getting that leave of absence? Was the school pretty, like, I assume pretty supportive of you taking that chance to go and fulfill your dreams and compete for Team Canada, or was it a lot of extra work on your end to make that possible?
I remember the school being pretty supportive. I honestly can't remember what the process was. I think I remember meeting with the dean of my college, Arts and Sciences, and kind of establishing a plan from there. But I don't remember it being too much of a headache.
Oh, that's good. That makes sense. And, you know, it's not often that that gets to happen, obviously, but as a school, it's good that we're able to support our student athletes in that way.
Now, Brian, as a student, what was the hardest class you took here at Cornell?
That's a tough question. I remember it wasn't so much that it was like the hardest, but it was the biggest learning curve. And it was like freshman year international relations. I just remember it was like, okay, this is what, like, this is your intro to the Gov major. And I know a lot of people kind of would take it and then realize a couple weeks in, like, not for them. I remember one of the eye-opening moments was we were coming up to like midterms, and it was Professor Katzenstein. I don't know if he's still there.
Unbelievable. Oh yeah, he's still here.
Yeah, yeah. I just love this class. But I remember them passing out like a thick book that was just on the Cold War. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, probably like 250 pages. And it was just on top of like our regular reading, we had to read this like for the midterm. It was just like, oh, and here's an entire book that you have to read in a week and know, you know, front to back. And but I loved it. I thought it was like, I was like, okay, this is for sure what I want to study. He was very captivating. Really, really amazing professor. So that one always sticks out in my mind because it was kind of like the quintessential, like, welcome to the Gov major.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've taken a couple classes with PK. I can say I love him. He's a great professor.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think, you know, all of us, we kind of have that moment, you know, like welcome to college too, or welcome to university moment, where, you know, you realize there's going to be, you know, in some ways it might be a little bit more challenging than your prior experiences, but it's just, you know, kind of part of the college experience and something that I think almost everyone goes through. And now we always ask a lot of the Cornellians that we have on this question, and hopefully you can answer it just plainly: red or white?
Like, I just go right immediately to like white because that's what we played at home in.
That's solid. And I guess that fits for Team Canada too, right? Because you got to keep the colors the same. So that's nice.
Yeah, I loved wearing red and white at school, and I just like the white jersey because playing on the road and in college was really fun, but nothing like playing at Lionel.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And we have, actually, Alex is the cowbell guy, so yes, helping to lead the line of faithful.
That's
so
a big responsibility.
I know, it's been it has been a true honor to do that. I'm looking forward to doing it next year as well as my senior year.
I'll have to look out for you if I make it to a game.
No, of course.
I think Michael and Alex, I think you know what I'm going to ask after you just asked that question, Michael. But what do you rather, what are your opinions about an alternate jersey, Brianne?
For Cornell?
Yeah.
I think it's unnecessary. I think we have the best looking jerseys.
Yes.
And I just love the classic. Just simple Cornell written across the chest. I think why fix or change anything that isn't broken?
Mm-hmm. Okay. No, it's true.
Fair enough.
That's true.
Because I mean, some people have suggested that some people have suggested that perhaps we make an alternate jersey that's red and white striped, like a candy cane. Others have suggested an all black kit, you know, as an alternate uniform rather.
I think if you go like alternate could be fun, but you have to stick to red and white. Like, we don't have black.
That's fair.
That's fair. I think they were thinking kind of like the Team Canada black, but I guess there you have more, you know, you can kind of go with whatever you want. But no, that's fair. For Cornell, you got to stick to the classic red and white.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you're not opposed to the idea of the candy cane.
No, actually, and when you said third, like an alternate jersey, that's where I went, my mind went to, because like, I don't know if it was in the 70s or 80s, they had a jersey like that. I can picture up on the wall in Lina, and that one was kind of cool, like the red, white candy stripe.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Brianne. You just made my whole semester by saying that. Thank you.
Well, maybe we'll come back. You know, we got to talk more with Coach, but we'll see. We'll see. And now I guess, you know, one of the final questions that we wanted to ask was, obviously, if you look at your time at Cornell and being an Olympian, and you obviously had these big tournaments, but obviously competing in Worlds, and then also for before when, you know, obviously with the new PWHPA, there you guys are growing to form a new league. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what professional women's hockey players are fighting for and striving for right now, and the importance of this fight for future generations in the sport?
Yeah, we're at this really exciting time in women's hockey, where I think the product is the highest level. There's so much talent, there's so much speed in the game. The interest in women's hockey is, I think, at its highest level. You look at the statistics coming out of the last Olympics, and I think it was the most watched hockey game in the United States in the past 2 years, including the Stanley Cup playoffs. So people want to see it. There's a market for it. But right now in our sport, there isn't a league that, you know, is what we believe as players truly professional. So has all the supports, has all the marketing investment, has the infrastructure, has the salaries. That would, I think, be true of a truly professional league. So there's, you know, all the players on Team Canada, on Team USA, and then many more have joined together to form the PWHPA, the Professional Women's Hockey Players Association. And our goal is to build a league that's going to live up to being truly professional and be sustainable and be the league that, you know, young girls can dream about playing in, just like young boys dream about playing in the NHL. So that's our goal. And we're really excited about the momentum we have behind that and all the support. And I think there's a lot of interest in what we're doing, and investors are paying attention. Fans, of course, are paying attention. And I think really exciting things are just around the corner.
And I know that the PWHPA, in accordance with SDPN, produced a podcast earlier this year, and I think it hopefully will be coming back, Noxie and Cax, which was, I listened to all the episodes, and it was great, you know, listening to some of the players' experiences, not only, you know, who work on the few who work on the admin side of the PWHPA, but also the players. And I think Jill was featured on an episode, so
yeah,
definitely people should check that out to learn more.
Absolutely. Yeah. They do a fantastic job. And if you want to kind of get to know our players, you know, outside the rink, I think it's a really cool avenue to do that.
Definitely. And I guess with that being said, looking back to your prior professional experience, what was it like to win with the Calgary Inferno? I guess, what is it, 6 years now or a few years back?
Yeah, we were able to win in 2016 and 2019. And it was the first championship for that club, and really exciting. I mean, we had so much talent on that roster, but in those years where we won, we were able to really kind of come together as a team and make all those pieces fit. And it was really special playing in Calgary in those years and having a chance to win a few Clarkson Cups. And I certainly hope that trophy isn't retired. It's a beautiful trophy, and hopefully maybe it can be used again in the future for women's pro hockey.
Hopefully the new league can adopt it, because obviously it has a lot of history and meaning and obviously importance. So that would be definitely cool to see, but I guess we'll see down the road. Hopefully, you know, as you said, this momentum is on its way. And I guess with that, if you look more recently, there was the rematch game in Pittsburgh between USA and Canada. And that was fun to watch too. And obviously bring some more momentum to the work that you guys are doing. And I was kind of curious watching the game, because I thought potentially it might be a little bit one of those situations where it's not quite as, you know, heated or intense, but it seemed like the energy level was pretty up on both sides. Would you say that's pretty fair?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of pride on the line. It's obviously not an Olympic game, so we might have, you know, not been quite as fast as we were a couple weeks earlier.
Yeah.
But both teams, I think, definitely wanted to win and definitely wanted to showcase our game and showcase what we're doing with the PWHPA. So I think in that respect, it was a huge success.
Definitely. Well, I guess with that, we have to say thank you so much, Brianne, for joining us in the Big Red in Beijing podcast. It's been an honor to follow, you know, you and your teammates and all the Cornell Olympians these past few months. Well, I guess especially when the games are going on, but now getting to interview and talk with you guys and hear about your experiences. It's very special for us. And we really hope that you enjoyed the podcast, all the listeners out there. And thank you so much, Brianne, again, for taking the time. And we wish you all the best and good luck, especially as you head back to competition on the ice. So once again, thanks again for making time for us.
Thank you guys. I had a blast being on, and honestly, it's so fun staying connected with the Cornell community. I feel so proud to be a member of that, of Ithaca community and the Cornell community. And I really appreciate all the support.
Awesome. Well, yeah, thanks again so much. Wow. And that marks our final interview of Big Red in Beijing. It was an honor talking with all the Olympians dating back to the beginning when we got to talk with Coach Dara and Lanka Sirdar, and now getting to talk with Brianne Jenner, the tournament MVP for women's hockey at the Beijing Olympics. Thanks again to Brianne for making the time to speak with us. And I'd also like to thank my co-hosts, Alex and Sean, and also dating back to when Gabe was joining me on the podcast for our first four episodes. This whole series has been an amazing experience for all of us at BRSN, getting to talk with these giants of Cornell sports history is really special. And hopefully you as the listener enjoyed this episode and all the episodes that we've done so far. Please make sure to check out everything that we're doing at the Big Red Sports Network. You can check out our website at cornellbrsn.com. And you can also check out some of the other podcasts that we're doing. We still have one final episode of Around the Gorge coming out soon, where we'll recap the entire year of Big Red Sports. But for now, thank you so much for listening to Big Red in Beijing. And for the last time, go Big Red.